papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore.
Oh, newspaper men be such interesting people.
They know the lowdown.
Now it can be told. We know all the words around here. Welcome to the Media Project. It's a half hour of commentary and analysis on matters in the media, giving you some insight into some of the ethical decisions that confront newsroom leaders, as well as some commentary on contemporary media issues. As our radio audience can hear, we are before a live audience here. We're recording today at the University at Albany before a live audience of faculty and students from 20 State University of New York campuses across the state. A conference here to talk about student journalism and about ways that campuses can support the training of journalists and the presentation of young journalists into their communities around the state. So we will be talking some about those issues with our regular Media Project contestants. We're not contestants, what are we?
Panelists.
There we are, that's the Media Projectors. This is all part of WAMC On The Road, a function of Northeast Public Radio. My name is Rex Smith. I'm the former editor of the Times Union, now creating the Upstate American on Substack, and I'm here with my colleagues. Judy Patrick is the former editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. You doing okay?
I am doing well. I just want to say I am a proud UAlbany graduate. I graduated in 1978, and I lived on Dutch and Indian Quads in my time here, and I got very lost here today.
Yeah, even so, today, coming back. We're here also with Barbara Lombardo, formerly editor, executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy. You teach here at UAlbany now.
Yes, I've been teaching since 2008, so watched a lot of changes happening on campus, and I have hired a lot of interns and students from UAlbany when I was at the Saratogian, and hopefully we're raising a lot of future journalists here for wherever they might be working.
Right, which means that I also hired a lot of people from UAlbany.
Yeah. Yes, and I was really happy to be listening to the people involved in the local news initiative from around the state at mostly SUNY schools, but also some private schools, talking about what you're doing to keep journalism alive.
And our fourth panelist today is Raga Justin from Bloomberg Business, correspondent in the state capitol, who is not, in fact, a SUNY graduate.
No, but I am a public school graduate, so I wear that with pride. I am, however, a first-time University of Albany parker and also got lost.
Parking on the campus.
They make it slightly confusing.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Raga came out of the University of Texas, which has, of course, a terrific journalism reputation, and I've hired from there as well, so it's a terrific thing. And she was a Hearst Fellow, a program that takes some of the outstanding student journalists from across the country in a very competitive environment and brings about a dozen of them, I believe, into Hearst newspapers for a two-year stint before she became a genuine capital correspondent for Bloomberg Business. So we're going to talk some here about student journalism in particular and about ways in which the student journalism training can help fuel what is a diminishing community news ecosystem. Because I think we're all aware of the difficulties that newspapers and other news organizations are having across the country. And there is a sense that a lot of that can be aided through the work of student journalists. So Barbara, this is actually happening now through some of the programs that you're discussing at this conference, right?
Absolutely. So here at UAlbany, we're partnering with the Daily Gazette and its weekly newspapers, primarily the Spotlight. And so students, although there are internships where a student might be working for a semester or for the summer with an organization like the Gazette, also through our classes, we're incorporating how to cover a news story and actually covering the stories, writing them, taking pictures and video, and then having them produce. We're providing in the classroom the training. We're providing the publication-ready material, and then we turn it over to the Gazette family, and they're publishing the work. So that's happening locally. And there's all different types of collaborations going on around the state, which was really interesting to hear today. And sometimes it's a non-journalism classroom where there's no journalism major. I think it was RIT, I was talking to somebody. Broome County has a program, Broome County Community College, SUNY schools. They might be doing things where it's an elective class, so it could be students from any major coming in and they're writing stories. The person in Broome County, out of his own pocket, he's established a website, and the students are writing for that, for the website. I wanted to mention a couple of the things where you have civic engagement. They have community advisory boards helping them decide what to cover. So sometimes it's on-campus coverage, and sometimes it's coverage in the community that the campus is located.
One of the difficulties of this I found in running a newsroom, and maybe, Judy, you can comment upon this as well, is finding the appropriate level of supervision for the student journalists, because to do a good job of providing guidance for an intern journalist takes a lot of effort, and yet you get the benefit of having some of the reporting there. It varies, right, depending on who you hire.
Right, and kudos to the local newspapers you're getting to work with you in the local news initiative, because I mean, in a day and age of straining resources, I mean, regular reporters are struggling to find enough editor time, quality editor time. So it takes a fair amount of commitment for the local paper to assign an editor to essentially act as a tutor. And you have to make sure you send the reporter out with enough information to give them a sense of kind of questions to ask, and then when they come back, to do that kind of debriefing with them, and then to help them craft the story. I mean, it's work. It's a lot of work, and, you know, I would imagine one of the challenges you might face is so many of the local newspapers or local media organizations cover things that maybe a college student thinks are boring, or they want to cover, like, you know, big environmental disaster, or they want to cover some investigative piece, but at first they have to start covering that town board meeting. Is that an issue?
An awful lot of journalists, I think, student journalists, are interested in writing about entertainment or writing their opinions on matters, whereas what you really need, you're saying, is someone who can understand tax rates, the NIMBY impulse of local citizens. How did you get trained, Raga? How did you figure out how to be a reporter, frankly, since you're the closest to having been a student here?
I sometimes still feel like a student journalist, which isn't great. But I started out on my high school newspaper, which I think was a fabulous way to kind of hit the ground running. You know, I went to a pretty small, fairly rural school, so we didn't have a huge journalism department, but it was an incredible experience. You know, we put out a print product every 6 weeks or so. And when I was there, we started launching and fully fleshing out our online product, which is crazy because like 10 years ago, you would have thought, you know, maybe that already would have been up and running, but it wasn't. And both of those experiences really shaped the next step. I went to college at the University of Texas, as Rex mentioned, and I worked at the Daily Texan, which is their student newspaper there. And I think, like you were saying, it was such a crash course in local government reporting. I mean, I was a city and state reporter, and so they sent me out to cover Austin City Council meetings. They sent me out to cover local zoning board meetings, things that I frankly did not understand at the time, but it was laying the groundwork for the career that I have now. So just a complete invaluable experience, and I truly would not be the reporter I am today without that. So yeah, I mean, it's incredibly important, I think, to find those opportunities if you're an aspiring young journalist or an aspiring journalist at all. There are so many opportunities just at the most kind of baseline level. And I don't even want to say student journalism is the baseline level, because like we're saying, they do a lot of really incredibly important work.
The work of internships often depends, it seems, on the capacity or the aggressiveness of a state or federal department of labor. There was a time a few years ago when the counsel to the Hearst Corporation, which I was working for, explained to me that basically if a student journalist, if an intern is doing work rather than requiring more work of your newsroom, it's probably illegal. That it should actually take more effort on the part of your newsroom than what you actually get from it. And so the value of doing internships for your newsroom was really more in the long-term investment in building the journalism infrastructure, because at that time, the Department of Labor, I'm thinking of during the Obama administration, was so aggressive in pursuing the notion of, in effect, replacement for full-time unionized newsroom workers. So this is it is an ongoing issue that sometimes comes and goes depending upon the government, right?
Right. And my former organization, New York Press Association, really prided itself on its internship program because it was a paid internship. One of the things I'm a believer, I think we probably all are, is that interns need to be paid, and that is the way we can get a full diversity of new journalists into our industry. I also wanted to say that when it came to hiring reporters, one of the really good guidelines for a good candidate is someone who worked on their student newspaper, their college newspaper. Those kinds of reporters who had that kind of field experience inevitably were really good hires fresh out of college.
This is not a knock on any specific outlet, but at the Daily Texan, we had to go through 3 rounds of edits on every single story, and I was filing like 3 or 4 times a week. I have not had that level of scrutiny yes. since.
Yeah,
and my work would totally, I mean, it needs it, and it would be welcomed. But yeah, those kids care a lot.
Absolutely. I remember very well my first byline in the Rapid City Journal in my hometown of Rapid City, South Dakota. And it was about a high school band festival. And I was very proud of what I had done, except the city editor pointed out that I had spoken of busing in the students, but I spelled it the way you would
like a kiss?
Yes. He pointed out that I had put in 1 S as opposed to 2, or was it 2 as opposed to 1? I don't know. Anyway, having an editor who will pay that kind of attention to what you're doing is the old-fashioned city editor approach, and it is hard to find these days in resource-challenged newsrooms.
Talking to journalists or former journalists here who are now teaching, that is a real issue because a lot of people have kind of thrown up their hands in the teaching of trying to get well-written stories and at least trying to get well-researched, credible stories that are good storytelling. And it might be podcasts, it might be audio, it might be written, but the bar is different about the content and how it's presented.
Absolutely. I think we ought to talk a bit, since you raised the question, Raga, of the Daily Texan, which is a fine, obviously, daily newspaper. We ought to talk about the student media. I met just before we were coming in here the new editor of the Albany Student Press, which has had ups and downs over the years, as most campus newspapers have. And I'm so glad to know that it is back and that there's an effort underway to do actual good journalism on the campus. This is a challenge at just about every campus, because when student journalists go about doing the work that they are charged to do, attempting to undertake the kind of reporting that we expect of good journalists, it often runs afoul of university administrations. And conflict ensues, and universities assume that they ought to be able to control this kind of thing. I don't know how that's resolved on SUNY campuses.
I think it's different at every campus. At University at Albany, the Albany Student Press has, for most of its life, been a strictly an independent newspaper, not relying on any connection with the administration and not relying on their funding. They would get their own advertising. But as things have progressed in recent years, things have changed, where they are now considered a club for financial purposes, so they have some funding through the student association, so it's not the administration of SUNY that's controlling them, and they're still independent, but they are relying to some extent on that club status so that they get some seed money from the student association. And they do a lot of coverage of the student association government, and sometimes the student association government is not happy with the way they're being covered in the ASP, and that raises issues.
The governing court decision on this is from 1988, the Hazelwood decision, which just because our listeners in the radio audience probably don't know this, it permits school officials to block the publication of certain articles in school newspapers, but the landmark case, actually, Tinker v. Des Moines, held in 1969 that, in the words of the decision, students and teachers do not shed their constitutional rights to freedom of speech or expression at the schoolhouse gate. So there are First Amendment rights that attach to student journalists, notwithstanding the fact that they are getting funding from either a student association or the university itself.
Right, and it, in large part, it depends on where the funding is coming from, where the control is. But what we're seeing at universities and colleges across the nation are subtle ways, well, maybe not so subtle ways, they are stopping the print edition of the newspaper, so the students aren't seeing the papers on racks. They're making it more difficult for people to access, and just shifting to digital, maintaining that is a more cost-efficient way of doing it. We're seeing real challenges to the right to publish around the country, and it's part of a leaning towards being more conservative about what you do. But even I remember back in the day, administrators did not like to be criticized in their local medical student paper, but we have seen instances. University Press does really great reporting and uncovers scandals that need to be uncovered.
Several years ago, I was still working at the Saratogian as the editor and teaching, and there was an incident where the S was being printed as well as being online at that time.
The ASP, and the Albany Student
Press. Albany Student Press was in print all over campus. And the weekend that they had the accepted students' day, so they were here with their parents to tour the university, the headline on the ASP on the stands had to do with the increase in reported rapes on campus. And the story was very carefully reported and accurately reported. The headline was accurate because it explains how there was a whole new way of reporting the numbers. So it was not that there was an increase in rapes, but that there was a marked increase in reported rapes. Somebody on the administration end pulled the newspapers from the racks around the campus because they didn't want people to see this. And then it did not end well for whoever's decision it was in the administration to do that.
It's something that I saw referred to in an article the other day as censorship through access. There's a controversy going on right now, I believe, at another UT campus, the University of Texas at Dallas, where there is a university-supported newspaper called the Mercury, and there is now a new independent newspaper called the Retrograde. The Mercury is available on 36 newsstands on campus. The Retrograde only has 4. And the editor of the Retrograde is upset, but I don't know quite what the obligation is. Is there an obligation to let any student who wants to start a newspaper have access to racks on campuses? This seems odd.
You know, I wonder if it honestly even means a little bit less now because of the access that anyone has to everybody, right? I mean, you can start a Substack, you can open a new X account, you can start a TikTok where you call yourself a news influencer. So in some ways, I wonder if the digital landscape has shifted enough to where we're talking about access, and it's incredibly important, but access, I mean, that question's already been blown up, right? I mean, access now means something completely different than it did 10 years ago and 20 years ago and at the time of the Tinker decision. So I don't know. I don't know if I have any more informed thoughts about that, but who controls what you see has always been a very important question. And established student media functions because it has a close relationship with the administration, often a controversial one, but you want that type of access to your university spokesman. You want that type of access to the university president so that you get the one-on-one interview with him, you know, or whoever it is. Independent student newspapers have always faced that problem of being sort of the young upstart, you know, the folks who don't necessarily have those typical lines of communication with the higher ups. So it's always been an issue. I don't know that it's just happening now, but
there seems to still be a value to print. I know there was a time about a decade ago when we were discussing creating a Times Union product that could live on the campuses of the 16 colleges and universities in the greater capital region. And one of the issues was that we knew that students wanted to be able to find something on their own. It would be more interesting if it seemed to be something of an underground paper as opposed to being imposed by Hearst Corporation. And so there is a value, and we even actually tried to create a product that looked a little bit down market so that it would seem to be something that people might find desirable. But we did think at that time, anyway, that there was some value to having that billboard of a print product. And I guess,
hey, whatever happened with that?
It did not have advertising support. That's the issue that is problematic for, you know, so many print products. Without advertising support, you're not going to do it.
Right. And, you know, I remember when I ran a daily newspaper, I would stop by and make sure to pick up the Albany student newspaper and the Union College student newspaper because invariably there would be a tip there that we could do to follow and create a real news story for us. I mean, it's one of those places where you needed to check because they had their ears on the ground.
Absolutely. Interesting little fact. So student journalists right now, by the way, a statistic that I am just reading from a 2022 Pew Research Center report, maybe that's a little bit outdated, but student journalists account for 9% of state capitol reporters. Huh. Are there students down at the legislative correspondence room in the state capitol now?
Yeah, I actually, I don't know that there's any actively working there at the moment. Of course, people apply for internships at various outlets, and I know that the Times Union, up until recently, had a summer internship for folks at the university. But no, you know, I don't know that. Albany has a very robust State House presence, though.
Yes.
I don't want to name any names, but like the Nebraska State House, I'm sure that the local student newspapers are, you know, pulling a lot of weight there.
Right. Well, there were never that many in Nebraska. Being from South Dakota, I can tell you that. I'm an expert. Does the Legislative Gazette no longer exist as a function of the university SUNY system? No, that for many years.
The Legislative Gazette has been revived, and they are affiliated primarily with New Paltz. They're also working with some UAlbany students, and they are going to try to build on being in the state capitol and having that as a very appealing place to learn the ropes of being a journalist. They are trying to grow that in a different format.
Well, that seems like a good idea, because at least there was always a professional editor overseeing the student journalists at work in the capitol. It also made the politicians feel better, because somebody would always show up for their press conferences. Oftentimes, the professional media would be avoiding the very obvious stuff in the pursuit of enterprise reporting instead.
We talked a little bit at this conference this morning also. We heard from the people at the Gazette about the Schenectady Foundation that is working with the Community Journalism Fund that Schenectady has created, and they will underwrite the cost of some coverage if it falls within the parameters of what they intend to have as community journalism. And it was interesting, because on a lot of fronts, but one was when Miles Reed is running it, who's a UAlbany grad and was running the Gazette for quite a while and has been on this panel multiple times. So he has to put a dollar value on a story. So if the foundation is funding, and what we didn't get a chance to talk about was, how do you put the dollar value? Is it because it took you 2 hours to write, or 6 hours to write, or is it priceless?
Absolutely. How do you have the embedded cost of the brain power that a reporter uses to actually create the thing? Our listeners, if you wish to share your thoughts, media@wamc.org is how you can interact with us. We're always glad to get your views. It's the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith, here with Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, and Raga Justin. And we are coming closer to the end of this live broadcast from WAMC on the road of the Media Project at the University at Albany campus. If you're accustomed to listening to the program, we sound just a little bit different today. I think it's important for us to bear in mind that in all of this, we're talking about raising a new generation of journalists who can carry on the traditions that we have found to be so important in this country that are now imperiled. And I wonder if it is advisable at this point for us to say, yes, we ought to be creating more journalists, as we find so many jobs being cut back. Is it really worthwhile for us to encourage young people to go into journalism? Would you encourage this in your kids?
I know, what blasphemy. What are you saying?
Is it a smart career decision for a young person?
So how do you define smart? Absolutely. You're keeping democracy alive as a journalist. And you're also informing people. You're helping them to make their community a better place, how to live and how to... Oh, my God, Rex. Yes.
I think that I set it up for you. Raga?
Well, my parents, they've been asking this question for the past 10 years. You know, I often wonder, looking online, which is a very scary place to be looking, if there's some well of opportunity that's dried up in the years since I applied for my first couple of jobs and got them. You know, but I think that's a pretty pessimistic view of things. I think that there's a lot of opportunities that we wouldn't necessarily recognize as journalism right now, but they are going to become the new, you know, version of journalism. I think whether that scares you or whether that excites you is a matter of probably, you know, how old you are and where you come from. But I think there's a lot of opportunities in the digital space, in this idea of new media that are coming up that allow you to practice democracy-saving journalistic techniques that aren't necessarily, you know, we're not publishing those in newspapers.
I love that, because I had a student in my class the other day saying, and told his parents that he was pursuing journalism, and there was a lot of eye-rolling involved.
Yeah. There was more than eye rolling in my case. I had many a lecture, many a sit down. I see someone waving.
It's a wonderful and valid thing to do,
yes.
And we certainly appreciate those who go into it, and we who have been a part of it for so many years are grateful. It is, in fact, keeping Americans aware of what truth lies beyond their own view. That's all we have time for in this edition of The Media Project from the University of Albany. WAMC on the road with Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, Raga Justin, and I'm Rex Smith. Thank you all for participating. Thanks to our producer, David Gustina, and thanks to you all for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the flow. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such...
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith. Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette and former vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and Raga Justin, Albany bureau chief for Bloomberg Government. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the flow. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.